All right. I'm gonna act named Alex.
Hey, Alex.
First off, I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come out here and speak tonight. It's always an honor to be able to serve Narcotics Anonymous in any form. Let's take a moment of silence. Invite a loving God into this moment with us.
God,
grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things I can.
Wisdom to prove that. So I am I'm grateful to be here today. Anytime I get like a speaking engagement, it always feels like a chore. And then I have to remind myself of like everything that Narcotics Anonymous has done for me, given to me in my life. So the least I can do is to show up and share a little bit about, you know, my experience with Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee again. It's a good spread of food here. I always appreciate good food. So thank you guys. You guys are, I know it's like, it can be like a thankless job serving on these committees. And you guys are killing it. You guys always kill it. So thank you. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about tonight or today, but I guess I'll start with my clean date. My clean date is January 3rd, 2016. God willing, in January, I'll have 10 years. It's fucking crazy to think about. I grew up in a small town in Blair, in Indiana County called Blairsville. Came from a very loving home. There's history of addiction in my family. But none of that shit really matters, like if there's history in my family or not. Like in Narcotics Anonymous, like what matters is like if I identify as an addict. You know what I mean? And it took me a long time to identify as an addict. So I never, there was no abuse, there was no real trauma, there was love, you know, it was a very loving home, and I never really felt, like, comfortable in my own skin. I never felt, it had nothing to do with, like, what anybody else did to me. It was like, that was my shit, you know, it was just how I felt. I just didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel liked. I felt like I needed to prove something. I still feel that way sometimes. But throughout school, I did well. I fell into a crowd. I ended up. I started partying like early on, like 12, 13, and from the moment I started, I knew that it was something that I loved and something that I wanted to continue to do the rest of my life. And it was like incredibly like negative consequences from the gate. Like the first time I ever drank, I ended up blacking out, passing out in the Little League field in my hometown, and I had to be like driven home, you know, like 12 years old, like back to my house, and my mom was like crying and a mess, you know. She had no idea what was going on. And like that was like how I started this whole thing. And that was really my pattern, man. I was like, there was nothing glamorous about my drug use. There was nothing, special. I never had money, right? I never had money, so it was always like scrounging together ways and means, always like doing grimy things to get what I needed. Like, I could never sell drugs. I never, you know, like I said, I never had a lot of money. I could never hold down jobs enough to like make any money. My drug use was very destructive. Like I loved it, man. Like I wanted more. I always wanted more. There was never enough. And I could be this way too today, like with food sometimes, man. It's fucking weird. Like there's a little bit of food left. I want to eat it all because I don't want it to run out. You know what I mean? Like, I want to get mine before you get yours. And, like, that's a fucked up way to think and live, but, like, that's, like, my, that was my attitude throughout my entire using. Was, like, I'm going to use it all now so it doesn't run out. Right? And, like, that cost me a lot, man, because, like, I'd get blitzed and just, like, wind up in terrible situations, like hospitals and, you know, car accidents, jail. So yeah, man, I'm not gonna get into all of that. I love to get high. I really did. Like, even towards the end, you know, honestly, I love getting high towards the end. Like, I sucked, like, it sucked. The way that it made me feel sucked, but I still loved it. You know, I did. And thank God for this program. And thank God for you guys. And thank God for the love and support that you guys show me here. I wound up getting clean at 22. You know, at the end of my road, my mom kicked me out of the house and it was cold out. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I was a leech from at the end of my road, man. I leeched off my mom, I leeched off my sisters. I was like a soul sucker, you know what I mean? Like, if you were around me, I was bringing you down. You know, I was not a pleasant person to be around. And then everybody around me, you know, wasn't that pleasant to be around either, because I was just sucking their souls, man. Yeah, so at the end of my road, I got kicked out. I lived outside for like 2 days, and it didn't work out great for me, man. I was like, it was freezing out, and I wasn't good at being homeless. And I wound up like coming back to my mom's house, knocking on the door. I said, please let me in. There's a whole lot of stuff that happened before this that like led to this point, but I'm skipping that. Knocked on the door. She said, what do you want? I said, I'm cold, like, will you let me in? You know, it was like a negotiation. She was like, well, the only thing, I'll let you in if you go to treatment. And I'm like, well, I don't need that, you know, negotiating. And finally, you know, decided, like, all right, I'm gonna go to treatment. And it was weird, like, whenever I went and did the assessment, it was the first time I was ever honest about any, like, what I was doing, the chemicals that I was using, all that. Like, I was never honest. I usually, like, cut it in half and left out certain things whenever I told people about how much I was using. But this time I was honest, wound up going into rehab, and it was a great experience, but not initially, right? Initially it sucked. Initially, I had no freedom, and it sucked. And there's a couple people in this room here today that were there at that facility, which is really cool, man. I'm grateful for that. Like, the person that was there working the detox floor whenever I went in is here tonight, which is really cool, you know? It's cool that people stick around, man. It's really cool that people stick around. And like, the longer I stay here, you know, the more people who were here whenever I got here aren't here anymore. So like, just stay, you know, just stay. For me, it's worked out it's worked out really good, me being here. Like, this was the best decision of my life, was to like, become a member of Narcotics Anonymous. So anyways, I went to treatment, and I wanted to leave a bunch of times, you know. I was miserable. I'd never, like, at that point, it had been years since I had not used for, like, 2 days in a row, right? It had been years since I'd gone, you know, 2 days without getting high. And, you know, I got clean, and all these emotions came back, you know, all these insecurities, all this anxiety, all this like fucking depression about like, how did my life get to this point, right? And you know, like, I was hopeless, I was absolutely hopeless. And anyways, the process of going through treatment was good, man. It was good. H and I came in. They shared a message with Narcotics Anonymous. I had never heard of Narcotics Anonymous, really. Actually, that's true. I'm lying to you. I did go to one meeting, one NA meeting prior to going to treatment when I was 19. And I didn't really pay attention much. I was high the whole time, you know. It was one of those deals. But anyways, I went to treatment, H and I came in. This time I actually listened a little bit to what the speaker was saying. And I related to what they were saying. You know, drug addicts, I can speak for myself, like, I can usually tell when somebody's bullshitting me. You know, that's a skill that, like, I learned throughout my life, throughout my addiction, was, like, to tell when somebody's bullshitting me or not, because it's like a, it's a way for us to protect ourselves, right? And like, I could tell this person who was up there speaking wasn't bullshitting. Like, they were saying things, they were telling their story, they were expressing the hope and the love that they feel, and I related to that, you know, it hit me. Like, I could tell, you know, and I started to get a little emotional. And I thought, like, all right, you know, maybe this will work. And, but I wasn't, like, dead set on it or anything, you know. Like, I went to rehab at 22. Like, I just didn't want to, like, be homeless or freeze, you know, when I went there. And throughout that process of, like, getting clean and getting that shit out of my system, I realized that, like, there was a little bit of hope that, like, maybe I could stay clean. You know, maybe, like, smoking weed and drinking like I was doing, like, because I thought smoking weed and drinking, really, smoking weed was, like, there was nothing wrong with it, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't cause me any issues. I never got into any trouble when I was smoking weed, you know? So, like, why would I give that up? I'll just, like, get out of here and just continue to smoke weed. And, like, I realized throughout this whole process, man, like, patterns and, like, the fact that, like, I didn't have much money, but all of my money would go to smoking weed, you know what I mean? Or it would go to drinking. And, you know, it was all about, like, what my priorities were, right? And I realized that, like, I couldn't stop. You know what I mean? Like, once I started, I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop. I didn't know how to stop. And in the process of, like, rehab, like, I did learn some valuable things there. And I learned a couple tools. But really, like, the main thing I got out of it, man, was, like, connections with you guys. Because a lot of people that worked there were in the fellowship, and they would take us to meetings. I would go to meetings, you know, and listen and hear people. And I didn't know what to think of it. Like, I didn't realize that, like, I didn't think you guys were, like, legitimate, you know? Like, I really didn't. Like, it seemed real fake, you know? Like, you guys couldn't have been telling the truth. You guys couldn't be happy. You guys, like, there were, like, older people here in the rooms, and I was like, what, you know, why are they still here? They were never drug addicts. Like, you know, dude's talking about being a pharmacist, and I'm like, what the, you know, what? You know? Like, there's no way. And until I got to know them, you know what I mean? Until I got to know some of the people, and I realized that, like, no, man, like, they're legit. And, yeah, so I got out of treatment, and I went into a three-quarter house, and it was good, man. It was a good experience being there. Like, it was what I needed at the time, you know. My first job in recovery, I was a janitor housekeeper, right, at a rehab, and I scrubbed fucking toilets for minimum $8 an hour, scrubbing toilets in a detox floor. And it sucked, you know what I mean? Like, it sucked. There's no getting around it, but, like, it was humbling, you know? It was very humbling. And at the time, if I'm being honest with you, man, at the time, I was just so grateful. I was really grateful at the time. as much as it sucked, I was just grateful to be like making a little bit of money, like showing up, feeling like I had a little purpose, you know, like if I wasn't there, these fucking toilets would get all disgusting and then people's experiences would be terrible and they'd leave treatment, right? So like, you gotta have a clean shitter, man. But seriously, like that's how I framed it, man. Like I was just grateful because you guys told me like, be grateful. Like it's about our attitudes, it's about our actions here, right? So like on my worst days in the beginning, man, I was just like, I tried to be grateful. And it wasn't even like trying to be grateful. I was grateful because like I hated myself whenever I went to treatment. And whenever I got out of treatment, I didn't hate myself as much. I still did, but like not as much. I felt a little better, right? And I went to meetings immediately, right? I went to meetings as soon as I got out. Went to a meeting my first day out. I did a 90 and 90. That was so important, man. Like my sponsor told me to do a 90 and 90, and I did it. Like I was grateful enough to have the opportunity to have a vehicle and have a license whenever I got clean. So like my mom let me use her vehicle for like the first month. And then I saved up enough money and I was able to buy my own. And it felt really good to be able to buy my own car in the beginning. You know, because I could have went back to her house and like that was always an option. I could have gone back to her house after treatment, but I really didn't want to, man. Like there needed to be some separation. There needed to be some, I needed to like earn my own way, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like I needed to feel like I was being self-sufficient. Because it's so easy, and I see it all the time, it's so easy to fall back into that cycle of like, all right, I'm gonna go back to where I was and like the same things are gonna happen again. And it's easy to like, it was easy for me to like fall back on my mom because she like would love me unconditionally, you know what I mean? And it was easy to get lazy there, you know? So I'm grateful that I got out, I was able to buy a car, I was able to do a 90 and 90, I was able to take other people to meetings because I had a car. And that was really cool, man. Like, and I, you know, just having those early relationships with people in recovery. I used to go to Johnstown all the time, like, that was my spot. Every Monday night, we'd go to Simple Solution. We'd go to the Phoenix afterwards. We'd eat wings. And that crew of people that was there at the time, man, not everybody's still there, but there's a couple, man. Not everybody's still here, but there's a couple that are still here. And it's like those relationships we form with people, like when we're new in the program, are super special. Like, you know, I don't know. It's hard to describe. But I'm grateful for those people. And yeah, man, so like I did a 90 and 90. I got a home group. My home group's super important to me. I still have the same home group today that I did whenever I got clean. Why Die, Friday night in Indiana. It's a speaker meeting. I love it, man. It's a great group. My home group today is like probably the most functional it's been in 6 years since after COVID. Like, after COVID hit, man, and we lost a member due to cancer, which was, you know, a terrible, tragic experience. But like, my home group struggled, man, and I thought about leaving a couple times. I don't know, I'm stubborn in that way. Like, once I like pick, like, this is gonna be my home group, I don't wanna let it go, you know? And so, but anyways, I'm just really grateful. Like, we have a bunch of members in our group that are like about it. Like, they show up early, they stay late, they set up, they make coffee, they have service positions there. I have a service position in my home group. I think that that's like critical. It was critical for me in the beginning. Whenever I joined my home group, I had like 90 days maybe Yeah, like probably like 100, 110 days. I was coming up on like 4 months. And I joined my home group. And immediately, like it was group conscience day. And I'm sitting there in the group conscience. The secretary had just left the group. And he was also a key holder. He left the group. And the GSR left the group. And so like we had like maybe three members that were showing up regularly. And Rich, he comes up to me, he's like, hey, do you have a car, right? And I said, yeah. He said, would you be willing to go to area service and represent our group? And I didn't know what any of that meant, but I was like, you know, yeah, I will, yeah, sure. And so he's like, great, you're our GSR. He says, hey, can you be here every Friday at 7? I said, yeah, I'm planning on it. And he's like, here's the key. You're going to be a key holder. You unlock these doors, make sure that this meeting's opened up and you can get the coffees going or whatever whenever you get here. And I was like, all right, great, you know. And like that felt really good, you know. It felt good to like be trusted to like show up. You know, it felt good to be accountable. You know what I mean? And yeah, man, it was amazing. That first year was a really amazing experience, and it wasn't easy. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't an easy process. Like emotionally, I was fucked. Like my emotions were all over the place, and but I was going to meetings all the time. You know, I was going to meetings all the time. I was around support all the time. I didn't really share a lot in meetings. It took a long time for me to open up. And like that's okay if that's who you are. Like it's okay to like not share in meetings, you know. Just wait till you're comfortable, get around some people. Like I had to like really feel a lot of people out before I would like feel comfortable sharing. And yeah, so that first year clean, I was busy, I will say that. Like I was never home until like 10 at night, you know, pretty much every night. I was always like, you know, going to meetings, going out to eat afterwards, hanging out with people, like constantly just like busy, going to events. We'd go to picnics all summer. I went to like two or three retreats my first summer clean. And it's like, this is the best time of year to get clean. If you're new, like just, you know, go to as many events as you can. I had a blast, and I still have a blast, you know, like 10 years later, like I still love my life. I still love Narcotics Anonymous. I still love these events. I love these people. Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, like I had a sponsor. I started working steps, and like through the process of working steps, I figured out kind of why I was so fucked up, you know. Like I learned a couple tools, like with step one, you know, I just have to accept shit, you know, that I don't want to, you know, because there's like things that are beyond my control, and if I dwell on them, I'll make myself crazy. Like if I think I can control things that I can't control, I will literally make myself insane and just like fixate on them, and I'll become miserable and I'll make everybody miserable around me. So like I found like through practicing step one is like learning that like I can control shit that's within my lane, you know, like my actions and my attitudes. And you know, like with working step one in terms of like using drugs, man, like it was obvious that I was a drug addict. It was obvious that like my life was very unmanageable. And you know, by the time I started working step one, I was like, I probably had like 4 months clean, man. And like the evidence was clear that like since I had stopped using drugs, my life was better, you know. And so that was enough evidence for me. So we went on to step two. And two was about hope, man. It was all about hope for me. Like seeing you guys live your lives, seeing you guys have families, seeing you guys like take care of your families and love each other and love me, you know, like show me love, because you didn't know me. Like I showed up here, you had no idea who I was, but you still like gave me rides, invited me places, invited me to your house, You know, paid for things whenever I did, like paid for my meals whenever I didn't have any money. And I'd be like, hey, no, like, do you want to go out to eat? I said, no, I don't have any money. They're like, I didn't ask you that. Do you want to come out to eat? And they'd like pay for my meals sometimes until I could pay for my own, man. And like, nobody was doing that shit for me before. Yeah, you guys just like, you guys gave me your time. And like, time, the older I get and the more like in this process I get, like, time is the most valuable resource we have, right? Like, it seems like you can tell a lot about a person by how they spend their time. Like, what is important to a person, right? So, like, for me, man, like, if somebody's given their time to me, like, that shows a lot, right? So, yeah, step two is all about, like, hope. It was all about seeing evidence. It was all about asking for help. Like, the practical application of step two for me is like asking for help, because I don't have answers, man. I don't. Sometimes I think I do, especially in the beginning. I didn't know shit, you know what I mean? So like, I would ask for help. And to like, today the application of two for me is like realizing, like, hey, keep an open mind. No. You might not know everything, even though you think you do. Like, ask some other people about their, like, what their opinion is on this. Or, like, maybe there's another way to think about this. Because, I don't know, a lot of you guys don't know me, but I'm very opinionated. And I'm very, like, I'm set in my ways about, like, the way I think of things. And it's harder for me to be open-minded now than it was for me to be open-minded whenever I first got clean. Like, that's my experience. And so it's a constant struggle for me to like practice that open-mindedness and practice that asking for help in the second step. And it's something I have to like continue to remind myself to do. So three, man, three was about faith. It was about like trusting that a loving God was gonna like help me out through this process, you know, try to do his will. I try not to make the steps complicated. I try not to make like working or writing on the steps too complicated. You know, I had a list of words. I wrote their definitions down. I learned about like the process of applying these principles in my life. God's will for me was always a really weird concept. Like, I don't know what God's will for me is, you know? Somebody, like, dumped it down for me. It was, like, basically, like, don't hurt people, don't hurt yourself. You know, that's it. Don't hurt people, don't hurt yourself. And, you know, I try to, it, like, don't lie. You know what I mean? Don't lie. I try to do that, you know what I mean? I try not to hurt people. I try not to hurt people's feelings. I do it. You know, I hurt people's feelings. It sucks. I feel bad. I used to not feel bad as much whenever, you know, before I got here, I didn't really feel bad whenever I would hurt people's feelings. It was just like part of being around me, I guess, you know. I had other things I was worried about. But like today, man, like I actually care about your feelings. I try not to hurt people's feelings. I try not to be a piece of shit today. You know, that's basically like step three is like, don't be a piece of shit. You know, do what you're supposed to do. And keep moving. You know what I mean? Keep moving through this process. Like, one of the principles in three that was big for me was like commitment. Like, committing to continuing the process of working the rest of the steps. Committing to this program. Following through, right? So I immediately, like after three, started on four, did that inventory. In that inventory, I learned a lot about like resentments I had, stuff that made me angry, you know, all this stuff I had to unpack. And I don't know, like it wasn't a terrible experience, but it wasn't like the best experience either. Like, you know, it was just work, you know what I mean? I had to like sit down and write some things that made me uncomfortable. And I'm glad I did, man, because working five with a sponsor, sitting down and telling another human being all this stuff that I never wanted to tell anybody, all that shit that I was so embarrassed about, you know, all that shit that like I never thought I would tell a soul. You know, things in my life that are just absolutely disgusting. Like, you know, thinking back on like how I used to live, like, I was not a good person. I was a really grimy person. And there's things in my life that were just disgusting. And I never thought I would tell anybody those things. But I told my sponsor these things, and he didn't like get up and walk away. He didn't like stop answering my calls whenever I would call him. You know, he said like, thank you for sharing that with me. I love you. And, you know, let's keep working, basically. You know, and I learned a lot through that process, man, because like, I learned a lot about like unconditional love, a lot about like forgiveness, a lot about like self-forgiveness, right? Because if like this person would like still be in the same room as me, even after I told him all this stuff, like maybe I can forgive myself a little bit for some of these things that I did. And like six and seven were a little more difficult because it had to do with shit that I was like doing today and like feelings and attitudes that I still have today, you know, working through these defects of character where, you know, I get angry, you know, I get like anxious. I like have this thing called self-pity, and like those are the defects, you know, like I feel these things whenever, like, and they come up, and then I act out on these things through shortcomings, you know, like these behaviors where like I'll get angry, I'll feel anger inside, and then I'll lash out on people that I love, you know, or I'll feel like depressed or self-pity, and it'll usually like manifest itself through anger, and I'll lash out at people that I love. And, or like laziness, you know what I mean? Or like, there's tons of them, you know what I mean? There's tons of defects that I found out that I have through this process. You know, I'm very obsessive, obviously. Like, I'm a fucking drug addict. Like, I get obsessed with things, right? I get obsessed with things that make me feel good. So like learning like in this process that like, I'm gonna have these defects. Whether or not I act on shortcomings on them is like, that's what I have control over, you know what I mean? Like the process of working six was like recognizing when these defects are starting to pop up and like trying to take a step back from them. You know, like, hey, you don't have to act. Like, you don't have to buy that thing that just popped up on your timeline that looks really cool. Like, you don't have to buy that, you know? And it took a lot of work, man. It took a lot of just like sitting and listening and getting uncomfortable and banging my head against the wall, trying to like stop these behaviors on my own, you know, because that was the key for me. I thought I could just do it on my own. I thought I could like stop these behaviors by myself. And finally, whenever I realized like, I mean, I need to start talking about this shit. I need to start asking people for help. I need to start practicing step two on these defects and these shortcomings. Whenever I would start telling on myself, I wouldn't do this stuff as much, you know? And people would relate to me and be like, yeah, me too, I'm feeling that too, or it's gonna be all right. Like, I'm struggling there too. Yeah, man, it was like, it was a process for me. It was definitely a process. But eventually, I mean, today, like, I feel like it's still a process today, you know what I mean? I still struggle with these things. I feel like I'm not as bad as I used to be with certain defects. Certain defects will pop up, But, you know, as long as I'm, like, asking for help and telling all myself, you know, I'm still working at it. Step 8 and 9, you know, for me, it was a weird thing, like, step 8, because I hadn't thought about a lot of that stuff in a while, and I went back and started working on 8, that list together, you know, it made a bunch of stuff pop up that I hadn't thought about in a long time, and, but it has nothing to do with me, man, it has everything to do with them, you know, and the process of making amends, I'll be honest with you, in the beginning, man, the process of making amends scared the shit out of me. You know, it really did. It scared the shit out of me. And I didn't want to do it. And I put it off for a while. You know, I put it off. I had my list. I just didn't make the amends for a long time. And some of them I still need to make. But I did, man. And it was really great. Like I sat down, said what I'd said, you know. And they said, like, I haven't thought about that in a long time. Like, I'm glad you're doing good, you know. Like, I had made living amends for the past 10 years. And, but it was important for me to, like, you know, formally make those amends. It was a good process. And yeah, and that's where I am with the steps. I'm on 10 right now, just working on it. We do steps real slow, man. Like, at least I do, you know. I just take my time with them. You know, it's not like I'm, once I'm done with step one, it's not like I'm not thinking about step one ever again. It's a constant, like, practice, you know what I mean? Like, I practice these principles in all my affairs. So, like, the things, like, principles I learned throughout the work and the steps, it's just constantly, I have to try to, like, implement them in my life and apply them to my life on a daily basis. And yeah, man, like, that's what the program's all about for me, man. It's just, like, trying not to be a piece of shit anymore, trying to improve my life, trying to improve other people's lives. I'm going to share a little bit about sponsorship, and I'm going to shut up. Over the past 2 or 3 years, I've had the privilege of I've had some sponsees in the past couple years, and it's been an amazing process. You know, I worked my first 4-step with a sponsee a while back, probably 2 or 3 months ago, and that was an amazing thing, man. I don't know, I love sponsorship. In the beginning, sponsorship intimidated me, like, because I got here, man, I was 22 years old. I never thought anybody would, like, want anything that I had to offer. And just being able to, like, have somebody come up to me, place a little bit of trust in me, for me to be selfless and give, like, try to selflessly give my time to this person, share what has worked in my life, support them when they're struggling, support them when they're fucking up, support them, you know, tell them, like, hey, maybe that's not a good idea, you know, maybe you shouldn't, you know, try to hook up with that girl who has 30 days, like, that's not a good idea, like, leave them girls alone, you know, don't be a fucking creep, you know, like, what do I know, but, yeah, man, sponsorship's great. I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for my sponsor, and I'm grateful for that, to have the opportunity to, like, help these guys out too. Because in all honesty, like, they help me more than I think I help them, if we're being real. You know, it's constantly just keeps me reminded of, like, why I do what I do, why I'm still here. It gives me purpose to still be here, even though sometimes, like, I don't want to be here, or I think I got other shit going on that's, like, more important than this. But, you know, sponsorship, home group, that keeps me grounded in this fellowship, and I am super grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And, yeah, man, thank you all for letting me be here tonight, and that's all I have.